Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Dave Lundy, William Pierce, Chris Roebling, and Christine Svensson. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you'd like to tweet me a comment or a question, it's @Dumo. We've got a full 2 hours of discussion, lots to talk about in a variety of areas for the full 2 hours this evening. But we're going to begin, and a little programming note that I want to share right at the beginning of the program. Earlier this week, when I read a story about the draft Joe Biden for president movement, I reached out and I invited William Pierce, who is with us this evening, to be our guest. And we will hear from him in just a few moments. But, of course, the country and the world was shocked when they heard the news this morning or late last night that Bo Biden, the 46-year-old son of Vice President Joe Biden, had passed away, had lost his battle with brain cancer. And, again, 46 years old, active military, distinguished career in the military, former Attorney General of the state of Delaware, and someone who at least a year ago was thinking about running for Delaware governor until health began to create serious problems for him. And again, he lost his battle with cancer today. So I'm going to begin with you, William, because again, you're not here because of what happened to Bo, but you're here because we were going to talk about this anyway. The death of Bo Biden, obviously a tragic loss for the family that's already had so much tragedy in it. Does that diminish the likelihood of you being successful in launching a draft movement for the vice president?
I don't think it diminishes it that much, Bruce. One thing that we all know about the Biden family is this is a family that, I like to say it, military saying, they improvise, they adapt, and they overcome. They have overcome a lot of adversity so far. Just look at how Joe Biden began his service to the United States when he was elected at the age of 29 years old to become a United States senator. His wife and one of his children was killed in a car accident. But instead of basically worrying about his family and basically worrying about himself, he put himself ahead and basically dedicate his life to public service. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the Biden family. Myself and a lot of our staffers, we are very close with the Biden family and with Bo personally. It's a really touching thing, but basically we're just going to keep doing this as we go forward.
Right. And also, again, the two presidential nominating conventions, when he was put forward as the vice president of the United States, in each case he was introduced by Bo Biden. And that relationship between this father and son is probably one of the most, I think, genuine and most poignant in American political history, certainly in contemporary political history. From the other side of the aisle, Chris Roebling, mm-hmm. The likelihood of a draft Biden movement moving forward with any degree of success, in your view?
Well, I don't think anything will happen in the next 30 days for right. obvious reasons. But I think I've said publicly I don't think that Hillary Clinton will be the nominee of the Democratic Party. And I think that the party is going to be searching for alternatives. And obviously we saw former Governor O'Malley sort of take a step closer. I mean, he's really now out there. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be increasing interest in alternatives. And you can't think about the Democratic side of the equation without considering Vice President Biden and, who knows, maybe a couple of senators, maybe a couple of other governors. So I think there's going to be an increase in the interest in alternatives as the weaknesses of Hillary Clinton are more clearly visible to the population at large.
Dave Lundy, our other Democrat this evening. Dave, your reaction to obviously the loss, and again, this program is about political process. I mean, in all of politics, wherever there is tragedy, there is also, you know, almost instant discussions about political ramifications.
You know, Bruce, we get very caught up in our lives with the day-to-day of politics. It's what we do. We're very passionate about that. But something like this Beau Biden tragedy happens, and you're struck by the pain of a parent burying a child, and it's something that nobody should have to endure. I feel horrible for the Biden family. Everybody I've ever talked to said Beau Biden was just one of a really terrific guy, just a great guy. And I extend my condolences to his family. In terms of the political side of this, I actually disagree strongly with my friend Chris. I think Hillary Clinton will be the nominee of the Democratic Party, notwithstanding some of the ebbs and flows in the current campaign. I don't think any of that really matters too much. It's interesting. You know, Martin O'Malley's out there. Bernie Sanders is out there. And they're both staking territory far to the left. And I just think that they're not creating a lot of room.
Christine Svensson is our other Republican. Your reaction to the political aspect of this and the tragic loss to the vice president and his wife.
It's incredibly sad for our country to have to watch this unfold, and the poor Biden family who has endured so much today. So I extend my condolences as well. So I am of more of Chris's mindset. I don't think Hillary has this sewn up. In theory, Joe Biden is the natural choice, being the vice president. And he has many, many issues, and I could talk about those for hours, his gaffes, the ridiculous things that he said. On the other hand, he is a good campaigner. And being the vice president with that sort of national sort of appeal, broad appeal, Barack Obama secretly supports him. I think that Joe Biden's the natural choice. Marty O'Malley, he's a failed big tax and spending governor.
But you also have a situation, and you just returned it. I mean, the thumbprint for the vice president now is that he's a political joke. I mean, all the late night comedians make fun of him because of some of the gaffes. And yet, to put that in context, to not only what happened to him, you know, last evening, but also to put it in context and to remind younger voters, and William, you're a young voter, you're in your 20s, is to remind them of the tragedy from which his whole campaign began, William.
Yeah.
And that's a story that, I mean, without being too macabre about it, I mean, you've got to sort of tell that story because it is a story of monumental overcoming tragedy.
And one quick thing. So a lot of pundits, they keep saying Hillary has a sewn up. I have to disagree with that. Everyone said that 8 years ago. Look what happened. President Obama came out. The other thing about it, too, is that basically we have a lot of room right before Iowa. Some candidates have still not even come out on the Republican side. One of our supporters, he actually made a joke. He wants to be a podium salesman at the Republican debate because there's so many candidates. When you look at the Democratic side, you can't even count.
Has the vice president told you, has he encouraged you to keep going?
We can't coordinate.
So you don't even communicate with him?
We don't communicate.
So if in the wake of this, he were to say to you, don't do this anymore, you would not be able to or would not listen to what he had to say?
We can't communicate. We can't coordinate. Basically, we do know, the vice president, we do know that he knows we exist. But basically, we just keep going forward. We've gotten a lot of support throughout the whole entire country. We have endorsements from congressmen and from legislators as well.
1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border. A draft Joe Biden movement. Again, we were going to talk about it tonight anyway. Your reaction, if you want to join in. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. 1-800-723-8029 is the phone number. We're going to continue our discussion, also move to some other areas as well. But again, on the subject, to sort of button up the discussion, at least on the Sunday morning shows, and all the Sunday morning shows dealt with the tragedy of the Biden family, and the funeral will be coming up early next week. On one of the programs that was on Meet the Press, one of the guests was John Kasich, the governor of Ohio. And I thought of all the comments that were said by everyone during all of the programs this morning, I thought this is the one that, in my view, stood out. Let's take a look.
Listen, before you get into the questions, we were talking early in the show about the quality of people in public life. And let me just say that I don't always agree with them. But, you know, Joe Biden is a special guy. And you think about this. He lost a wife, a daughter, and now a son. Mm-hmm. And he continues to serve. So we start thinking about the quality of people. Joe Biden, whether you agree with him or not, he's a real guy. He's a real stand-up guy. And I'm going to pray for him because he's had a lifetime of tears. And God bless you, Joe.
Couldn't say it better myself.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I actually remember the tragedy when it took place.
So do I. As
I'm sure you do. And he was elected at the age of 29, and then he had the
1972.
2 months in 72. And so he has the 2 months to January of 73, and it was in that snowy December season. I forget exactly, right before Christmas. It was like almost Christmas Eve or something. And terrible, tragic car accident, and his wife and his daughter in the car are killed, and he goes into deep depression, and he doesn't know what to do. And I forget who it was he turned to. It was one of the old Delaware political chieftains or something, and they said, Joe, you got to find your own path or something. And the guy came out of this, and he's been amazing.
Well, when he was sworn in, and these were pictures that were shown today, when he was sworn into the United States Senate, he was not sworn in the well of the house. He was sworn in the hospital room with Bo, literally just feet away. And Hunter.
Right. And one of the people to whom he turned at the time, I think, was Teddy Kennedy.
That's right.
Because of
Ted Kennedy helping him through it.
Now, I want to say something politically in agreement with Christine about Joe Biden being the natural successor on the Democratic side as an outsider, as a former Democrat. He can lay claim to the domestic agenda of Barack Obama. And if people are looking at the record of Barack Obama, I mean, I don't agree with any of it, but if there's any kind of success on the Barack Obama scale, it's going to be the domestic side. It sure as heck is not going to be the international side, which I know we're getting to later, which is a parade of horribles. You know, 270,000 dead Syrian. I mean, Barack Obama has failed every test of leadership internationally.
Well,
that's where Hillary is. And Joe is the one who was in there guiding the Obama legislative strategy to the extent they had one.
He was also the one that really moved the president on same-sex marriage when he announced it on Meet the Press.
Biden can go in and say, our work is not yet done. We still have a lot more work to do. We're halfway there, and we need to finish the Obama agenda.
And Hillary can say, I'm not really sure what I want to do yet.
Let me ask you this question, William, because obviously you're hearing Republicans right now say nice things about Joe Biden. Obviously, if you are successful and he were to emerge as a candidate, they wouldn't be saying so many nice things about him. They would be talking about sort of the comic aspect of what he's been done. But what has been the response? I mean, prior to this, by the way, has there been – what response has there been just today in the wake of the news about Bo Biden?
All of us over at Draft Brand, we've been busy all day just feeding comments in from our supporters, endorsers, and donors throughout the whole entire country. And pretty much right now what we're just doing is we're just giving any most of the support we need to the Bidens and basically just laying low for a little bit.
You're a pack. You say you can't coordinate. How much money do you have? I mean, and how are you soliciting that money?
So, yeah, we're super PAC, so we can accept unlimited amounts of money. Right now, we're on track to meet our goal at the end of the quarter for $500,000. And most of that money is actually going. We're going to be opening offices next month, actually, in Iowa. We have a fundraiser this week, actually, out in D.C. with Congressman Carney. Mm-hmm. We have New Hampshire endorsers coming out as well.
Do you understand the yours is an uphill fight? Do you understand that because of the death of his son that it becomes maybe even a tougher road for you to climb?
It is.
Because I mean, you know, we are talking about politics and the procedure tonight, which is what this show is all about. But it would, some people would be listening to this program and saying it's, the discussion is sort of inappropriate.
I have to, a little bit, I have to agree with that. But at the same time, it was an uphill battle to begin with. Because basically, if anyone knew anything about Joe, about the vice president, they know he puts his family ahead of himself. He puts everyone else ahead of himself. As you said earlier, Bruce, Beau Biden was thinking about running for governor. He was already declared, and basically the vice president, a lot of people we've been talking to, they said he was going to be focusing on that. So now basically we, as an organization, we're just trying to serve the vice president that basically he has the support throughout the country, financially, politically, and grassroots rise to run.
Dave Lundy, you wanted to make a point about Joe Biden, and let me just ask this question, and I'll let you respond any way you want. But if he really wanted to be president of the United States, don't you think he would have been far more aggressive out there, letting people know and maybe stopping Hillary with some of her advance work?
Well, it's interesting you said that, Bruce, because that's actually the direction I was about to go into. Early
psychic.
You are a psychic. It's like you've been doing this for a couple of years. So early on, Joe Biden very clearly was making noises that he's thinking about running, that it's not a foregone conclusion for Hillary. He was sending messages overtly and covertly, and it was not subtle that he did not appreciate the idea that he was not a factor. And so he hasn't been doing that in quite a while. I have not heard.
Son's been battling cancer.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, okay, but
and I'm sure Sidney Blumenthal or some other thug from the Clintons went over and said, "Joe, who are you kidding here?"
Well, thank you for the moment of bad taste, Chris. But nonetheless, I think that Joe Biden has very clearly not been demonstrating as much zeal for it than he had earlier on. Also,
but because of the reasons that just
well, maybe
Chris just said.
maybe
I
not.
Think the reasons
I mean,
are
I
that-
think that also President Obama. Is with all due respect to Christine's claim that he secretly is supporting Biden, I think he's demonstrating pretty clearly that he is overtly supporting Hillary.
I have to disagree
he's not overtly supporting Hillary.
Go ahead, Christine.
There is a major war between the Obamas and the Clintons, yeah. And that is never going away. Obama would love to go out and support Joe Biden, and the only reason that Joe Biden is not overtly running is because Obama is not overtly giving him that support.
Why not?
Because he knows that it would look really, really bad. He doesn't want to. And I think he's cut a deal with the Clintons. I think he cut a deal with Bill Clinton a long time ago to get Bill Clinton's assistance for him to get through the generals. And he would add Hillary on, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, yeah. So I was actually just in Iowa, New Hampshire a few weeks ago talking to a few activists.
Regular people?
Regular people plus basically pass endorsers of everyone from John Edwards all the way to Obama. And this is the thing that everyone has been saying. They're basically sitting there and they're saying if the vice president didn't want us to support him or like if the vice president wanted us to support Hillary, we would have gotten a call so far. We did not get that call. We are getting endorsers from state representatives, state senators.
Hillary's falling on her face.
No, but this is the thing, though. If the vice president was done and if he was just going to retire at the end of this term and just go back to Delaware, he would have made those calls to Iowa and New Hampshire. He has not.
Right.
He would have made those calls to his donors. He has not. We would not be here as an organization. There would have been some clues, basically some smoke signal going up saying, "Hey, stop it. You know, let's just back away."
But what does that tell you about whether he's got the fire in the belly to run that?
He has a fire in the belly. In all media accounts, he said he's going to make his decision by the end of the summer. We're just working on that and we're just focused on that. Just yesterday, throughout the whole entire country, we had 80 barbecues, just average people getting together and just organizing.
What's fascinating about this is that the Democrats are afraid of a campaign. They're afraid of people challenging Hillary.
No.
They are terrified.
Oh, of course
that
you are.
Joe, they no. are absolutely, no. They know Hillary has a glass jaw. They saw her fall on her face 8 years ago. Most of them realize that is eminently, or that is distinctly possible again.
They need a clean
and
primary.
So they want to just jam her through. And it's all of this insider Clintonism.
Let's our Democrat respond.
Look,
Dave.
I've been on both sides of this. I'm close to very high up people on the Obama side and close to very high up people on the Clinton side. What you guys are saying about...
And now you're close to the draft Biden guy.
Right, well, physically, yes.
physically right next to you.
We just bumped elbows, literally. But no, it is the idea that nobody in the world nobody in the Democratic Party wants Hillary to have a challenge is wrong. It's exactly backwards because...
They all want her to have a challenge.
We all want her to have a challenge, just not... A meaningful
not
challenge.
Not a meaningful challenge. Oh, well, I get
a challenge
it. They want the bosses to dictate. No, this is Hillary who came out of the 1970s reform, and now she's in the boss position. It's coming from the higher-ups, and you're all supposed to...
So Bernie Sanders... So Bernie Sanders...
Baloney.
Bernie Sanders is not a serious... Bernie Sanders is not a serious candidate to you, then.
No, Bernie Sanders is a serious candidate of the left to evoke a lot of energy and enthusiasm, as Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders
and
seem to be.
He thinks that women should be
Martin O'Malley.
Just
wait
for one moment.
Let him finish. I want to hear him talking.
This isn't a Lundy lunch. You can't interrupt me every 12 seconds.
I want Dave to talk about the enthusiasm of Martin O'Malley.
A brief conversation.
Where is this?
Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders are competing for the progressive energy, okay? Bernie Sanders is going to win that fight, by the way.
I agree.
I don't know why Martin O'Malley decides that the territory he's going to stake out is to the left of Bernie Sanders. But, you know,
I did not know there was a left of Bernie
exactly.
Sanders.
Exactly. But... the only self-identified socialist in the United States government. Nonetheless, I think it's been it will be interesting. It will force her to confront the internal schisms within the Democratic Party with the progressive left. She will have an actual challenge. But the question is, will that challenge be a challenge for the nomination? And I would argue that no, it's not going to be. And the chance that the reason that Vice President Biden has not categorically ruled it out is because he's hedging just in case.
Bye.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8029. We're going to introduce our guests or allow them to introduce themselves. And we begin with one of our Democrats, David Lundy.
I'm Dave Lundy, president of Aileron Communications. We're a PR and public affairs strategy firm focusing on the innovation space. I live in the burbs with my wife and my two lovely kids, Eli and Max.
Christine Svensson.
Christine Svensson, principal of Svensson Law Offices. I practice in political, family, and employment law, and I enjoy my Republican activism.
And you're the National Republican Lawyers Association.
I am the Illinois co-chair for the Republican National Lawyers Association.
Very good. William Pierce.
My name's Will Pierce. I'm an executive director of Draft Biden 2016, Army veteran reserve captain.
Yes, bravo.
And Afghanistan and Iraq.
Afghanistan, Iraq, and in Gitmo.
Okay. And Gitmo. What did you do at Gitmo?
I just did external security.
You just did external security.
I just did external.
Thank you.
thank you for your service.
Yes. I'm Chris Roebling, and I'm thanking William Pierce for his service. And I'm a long-time friend of the program. See 35 years up on the
35
screen.
35 years.
And I'm in there for about 30, I think. And
I've been going through a lot of old tapes, and your name is on there a lot.
Sorry about
that.
The last
10 years,
I think I was
on a lot.
It was your speed dial was stuck or something. But
and you know who
good
was also on this program? I was on this program. There was a person by the name of Billy Pierce. The great White Sox left-hander when we did the program live from Cooperstown, New York, with the induction of Nellie Fox.
Oh, wow.
As one of about 45 remotes.
As long as you're...
Show.
Isn't Cooperstown truly an amazing
spot?
It
is. If you've never been to Cooperstown, it's a wonderful place.
And there's more there than just baseball.
Yes.
It's naturally
yes.
beautiful. There's great yes. summertime opera. There's a great... American Art Museum.
Yeah, very nice.
It's amazing stuff.
Go to, upstate New York is, you know, I when you think of New York, it's a lot more than New York City. We're now going to switch gears. We've talked about Joe Biden, the draft Joe Biden movement. And now we're going to talk about the other huge story this week, and that is the indictment of House Speaker Dennis Hastert, former House Speaker Dennis Hastert, longtime member of the Illinois Congressional Delegation. And Chris Roebling, around the table, you probably knew Denny Hastert better than anyone else. I've known him for about 30 years myself. But your reaction to the story and the way this story is not likely to go away quickly.
Yeah, it's a terrible personal tragedy. It's something of which I had no knowledge. And I was involved in his first campaign beyond the borders of his state representative district. Not with Denny. I was helping people who were opposed to Denny. And that's when he got the nomination to run for Congress in the summer of 1986. He actually filled a vacancy and nomination and got elected in 1986. So Denny, it's very sad. And it's a tragic story, because it dates back to his service as a high school teacher and coach. And apparently a minor was involved, and maybe more than one. So it's terrible news.
As a lawyer, Christine, how do you look at this story based on what you know and what's been reported thus far?
So it's absolutely fascinating from a legal perspective, this case, because one has to think about a number of issues. First and foremost, prosecutorial abuse of discretion, which we have seen before in this very district of the Northern District of Illinois. I would suggest that we saw it with Rod Blagojevich, to be frank. But look at this case. He was indicted on two counts. One is structuring. The other is lying to the FBI. It is extremely rare for anybody in this district or anywhere around the country to be prosecuted for those crimes. It's fascinating the way they went about it, but why is this USA looking at people instead of crimes? That's what it seems to be. They are looking for actual people to indict rather than the crime itself. It's also interesting that the underlying allegations, which, by the way, I believe all of the rumors that are out there, I do think that there was horrible abuse of a child, a young child, just based upon people that I've talked to, et cetera. I think it's absolutely awful. I hope they throw the book at him. But I hope they throw the book.
But there's no. Again, it's hearsay at the moment.
Right. But I've spoken myself to an individual who was an actual wrestler on Hastert's team back in the day.
So you're close.
I'm close
You've
to this.
You've got someone who's close.
Absolutely.
Is this the person that you're referring to, potentially individual
no.
A?
No, it's not. But we think I think I know who individual,
but individual A
is.
Individual A is known to the folks who are part of that
That's right.
group.
But we know who it is.
I do want to say that when he was running for state rep and when he ran for Congress, and I think for many campaigns in Congress, I don't think any of this ever got out. I don't think this was kept under wraps. I think somewhat obviously by him, but also by the alleged victims.
So
I want to come back to you because I'm very interested in your legal perspective, but I want to look at it from a political perspective. Dave Lundy.
Well, first I have to defend the U.S. attorney here. It's my understanding that Denny made more than a dozen withdrawals of over $50,000 in cash each
of his own money.
His bank warned him. Now, mind you, everybody knows you are not allowed to make cash withdrawals of greater than $10,000 without it being reported to the
feds. I don't think everybody knows that. But
I promise you the former Speaker of the House should know that.
Right, right. Okay.
So he was warned by his bank, you can't do this. He was warned again and again and again, and he ignored his bank. And then finally, he listened and started structuring transactions and did more than 100 transactions of less than $10,000 apiece. I promise you, the feds would have noticed whether he's the Speaker of the House or his name was Denny Phillips. I think it's irresponsible, frankly, for you to say that they were targeting him, whether because he's a Republican or the Speaker or anything else. I think the conduct, forget the sexual abuse, the alleged sexual abuse, the conduct was outrageously stupid. And I'm dumbfounded that the former Speaker would do that. And then when confronted saying, oh, the reason I did this is I was hoarding cash because I didn't trust the banking system. Oh, my God. So, frankly, Denny should be prosecuted for failing the stupid test.
And by the way, for those of you who saw the show several weeks ago or listened to the program several weeks ago, when we had two former deputy U.S. attorneys here, one was Pat Brady, the former chairman of the Republican Party, and we had a Democrat, Patrick Cotter, and we had a great discussion on the radio broadcast. It'll actually play as the television show next week in this time slot. But what they both said, one Republican, one Democrat, they both said the question was, what should you do when government knocks on your door? And they both said, don't talk.
Call a lawyer.
I want to say I was at a professional event with, I'm not an attorney, but I was at a professional event with Justice Scalia. And he was making the point that the court had removed immunity for the exculpatory denial, which is, hey, I didn't do it. That's no longer, you no longer get a freebie. That, I mean, for decades and decades and decades, you had a freebie, hey, I didn't do it. That's now subject to prosecution. And Scalia was saying, this is a very different world than what we grew up in. And he cited a case from his own, you know, when he was a kid, hey, sister, I didn't do it. No more. You cannot
speak.
William
Pierce, your reaction to this indictment of former Speaker Hastert?
I want to take it one step further. This is one thing that a lot of people have not been talking about. The whole entire Patriot Act, when it came out, was under Speaker Hastert. So instead of basically just some average Joe, just to speak himself, knowing this is a man who helped push through the laws which changed the Bacon regulation regarding this. So he should understand it one step further, not even just as Speaker or just as average Joe, but yeah. If he helped offer the legislation and help push it through, he should understand you cannot, just saying what you were saying, he should know you cannot withdraw more than $10,000.
No, that's an absolutely great point. It's completely on point. Here's the thing. He knew exactly what he was doing. He doesn't pass the stupid test. But that's not the issue, though. The issue is whether or not the federal prosecutors have been consistent in prosecuting these types of crimes. Are they prosecuting others for the exact same sorts of things? This statute was designed to get money launderers, drug dealers, terrorists even. Now, the fact that it was not designed to go after people like Denny Hastert, who was trying to cover something up, doesn't mean that it can't be prosecuted.
But part of that investigation, could it, obviously, if we're withdrawing $50,000 and you were the former Speaker, there is a suspicion that maybe there was some blackmail involved
or something related
to the government when he was the Speaker. And in this particular
case,
no one is charging Individual A or suggesting that Individual A at this moment was extorting Denny Hastert.
It's funny that they're not, because
more
it was extortion.
Gift.
I don't know how that's not extortion, but he's cut a deal most likely. He gave them all the facts and got immunity.
But wait a minute. What if Speaker Hastert decided, absent any sort of a threat, that if there was a relationship with this man, maybe there was abuse, maybe there was a relationship, and he wanted to basically present this with a gift. I mean, they have referred to it in the media as hush money.
Right.
Now, hush money doesn't necessarily mean that someone asked for it. I mean,
well, you have a point there. It may not be illegal what he was doing. I mean, you can split hairs on that.
Right.
No,
yeah,
you have
it was gratuitous.
There.
But
right.
But then you see that you get back to this other element, the other, I think, fork with David's test. He should have just kept doing the 50 grand.
Yeah.
If you do the 50 grand, you get reported. It's his money. We don't have a situation in this country yet, no matter what the Democrats do, we don't have a situation in this country yet where you can't take money out of your own account.
That's the outrageous thing, right.
If he takes money out of his own account at 50 grand, he knows it's being reported. It's his money. He can do with it
all
as he wants.
But the outrageous thing,
all
he had to do was write a cashier's check.
Right.
Go ahead.
Here's what he had to do.
Cashier's checks or written a personal check. Or there's like 50 other ways he could have paid off this person without violating federal law.
The minute that this guy came to him. All he had to do was call his lawyer and have his lawyer draw up a contract where everything would be kept under seal.
But
now, granted, there are leaks in
but
contracts.
We don't but know leaks. That individual A came to him and asked for the money. We
That's
don't,
what it sounded like.
It sounded like, but it didn't say that in the...
Well, Dallas Ingman's in this morning.
Back shortly from Chicago. Weigh in on Denny Hastert. Back shortly.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Now, again, we should mention, you were not a fan of Denny Hastert.
No. Why? I mean, well, he's an establishmentarian, big government Republican, and his dedication was really to growing the size, the scope, the cost, and the intrusion of government into the lives of regular Americans. He never stood for any discernible Republican principle.
No, he didn't.
Mean, he was just a go-along, get-along guy.
Precisely.
And as Speaker... Well, I don't want to say rhino. I want to say he was very much of a good fellow, back-slapping kind of guy, and that's how he moved up in leadership. That part he was very good at, but he didn't have any moral or any sort of political beliefs.
No, not at all. And he brought those goodies back to his district. I mean, really pretty much shamelessly. And he made a lot of money off of it. I mean, he made himself wealthy passing laws that benefited him.
Someone that allowed money that allowed him to spend $3.5 million to pay this person off.
I think the real question in the Republican Party, and is not conservative moderate. The real question in the Republican Party, the real discernment in the Republican Party is establishment reform. And there are reformers who are conservatives, and there are reformers who are moderates. There are establishmentarians who claim to be conservative, claim to be moderate. And Denny was on the establishmentarian side.
What I have heard so many, since this story broke several days ago, the most frequent thing that I've heard from my Democratic and independent friends and even some Republican friends, well, it's another Republican sex scandal. Are you gloating because of this sex scandal?
I'm not gloating. Look, some
are Republicans,
apparently one or more minors may have been sexually abused by their coach, by a trusted adult. There's no gloating on that.
Right.
It is sad. This is not an office holder who was voting one way and acting a different way. This is just sad and pathetic and
but
you know,
he was speaker during the Mark Foley controversy, which involved pages in the House.
I think this is an area that is going to get another look because he was criticized. They were the House Republican leadership
dragging their feet
horribly. Understood there was some issue with Foley. I don't know how much
they understood. A couple years before.
Well, I was going to say it was about 12 or 13 months before this thing became public. And once it became public, it began very quickly to appear that the House Republican leadership under Speaker Hastert had not acted on
and Congressman Shimkus.
And perhaps Congressman Shimkus, yes. I think you're right about that, but they had not acted as decisively and as definitively as people then thought they should have. And that's probably going to get another look, and who knows the impact.
But I tend to think that wasn't so much about sex as much as it was just about the traditional, just cover your own, just push it under the rug. I mean, look, clearly the Republican Party has a sex problem.
I don't think that's clear at all.
I'd like to address that.
Oh, good grief.
I don't think that's clear
at all.
If I may.
I think the Democrats have sex problems.
What are you talking about?
What is John
Edwards
all about? What about Wiener Schnitzel?
They have a gay sex problem.
Congressman Wiener Schnitzel.
They have a gay sex problem.
I don't know. Yeah, Elliot Spitzer.
Bill Clinton.
One at a time.
Okay.
Hey, you go
so,
easy on that.
To be honest, here's the difference between Republicans and Democrats. Republicans,
oh, can't wait
other
to hear this.
Than the Mark Foley issue, which we now can actually understand better because of what Hastert is about, other than that, we actually do clean house and we get rid of our guys. The only guy we've never gone after and kicked out for sexual misconduct is David Vitter. Other than that, every one of them, by the wayside, Boehner, they'll all kick him out. Okay?
Usually within a day or two.
Yeah. Democrats, the exact
or
opposite.
A month or 2 months or 6 months
or
following
leadership.
A public
meeting.
Okay. Yeah. Or leadership will.
You didn't put your comment there. You're not
will.
Saying Boehner. You were saying Boehner threw him out. You were not
threw
putting Boehner in your litany of
no,
people.
God,
oh,
no, God, no.
Oh, that, well, that's,
pardon me.
That's why I want to clarify
Boehner
your point.
Or McConnell or whomever will kick them out. Democrats, are you kidding me? I mean, they just blink an eye and say, what? Who cares that Elliot Spitzer did this? Right. Who cares that Bill Clinton abused a poor child
at the
White House?
Well, their answer is they raise a lot of money in Hollywood,
here's
so they're
one,
okay.
That's right.
Here's one question I want to ask you, though. You allege that the... that the U.S. Attorney, Fardin, in the Northern District of Illinois,
Zach Fardin,
yeah. You allege that maybe his office, you know, poorly handled this. This decision would have been made in Washington, D.C.
I don't know about that.
I don't think that you file an indictment against the former Speaker of the House without someone
I don't
at
think
DOJ
we know.
Calling that.
Oh, well. They would know about it. But those prosecutors have a lot of their own discretion. Fitzgerald did. I mean, did he ever go to someone and say, I want to go after, you know, Scooter Libby and Dick Cheney?
I'll bet you he reported it to the Attorney
General.
Well, that was different. That
was
a special counsel.
That was under special
right.
counsel.
I know.
I'll bet you every indictment that Patrick
I think that these guys
let the DOJ. And
I get that
he was
a special prosecutor. Right.
Including, I would assume, some of these cases, I would assume that it would go to the President of the United States.
Well, Blagojevich did. We know that.
Right.
I mean, that's – we know that Blagojevich – we know that Fitzgerald –
would this have
I
gone –
I guess in theory it would have then. It would have
would
gone through DOJ.
I mean –
They're all major prosecutions are run by main justice. All major prosecutions are run by main justice. And there is no way that somebody in the Chicago office or Seattle or San Diego, whatever, is going to indict a former Speaker of the House without running that by main right. justice. But I'm not claiming any kind of political anything.
No.
I don't even think.
I'm not either.
Christine's not. Christine is
I'm not
equal application of the
that's
law.
That's it.
What
exactly.
What I'm asking, though, is not that we would have wanted him to do to put the kibosh on this thing. The question is, when you're indicting the former Speaker of the House from Illinois, when the President of the United States
was from
Illinois,
right.
At some point they served in Congress together, right?
No.
In Congress?
No, because he was
Hastert sure?
was out by 2006. We
so
lost.
Well, Barack was in the Senate in 2006.
Oh, yeah.
Was he elected in 6?
4.
Yeah, 4.
Oh, was elected
4.
4. So there was a, so
there was a convention speech, okay. You might have remembered.
And at this particular point, again, when he was there, he was the most powerful Republican from Illinois.
Yes.
So, okay, so I'm just... Again, I'm not suggesting that he should have put the kibosh on this, but it would seem to me that an indictment of this nature goes pretty high up in the Justice Department. We're going to continue our discussion, not this one. We're going to switch gears to the other big, big story, and that is the Patriot Act. It is expected to expire in the next several hours, and we're going to talk about it in the next hour of Beyond the Beltway. Wherever you're listening, from coast to coast and border to border, this is Beyond the Beltway now in our 35th year on the air. Raid is here. Come on down to the Museum of Broadcast Communications as we pay tribute to the true advertising icons known as the Raid Bugs. Admission is free during the week of June 2nd through the 6th. So come on down and join us with the whole family at 360 North State Street in downtown Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a 4-diamond hotel experience with a convenient location?
It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Democrat Dave Lundy, Democrat William Pierce, Executive Director of the Draft Biden 2016 Committee, Republican Chris Roebling and Christine Svensson, Republican lawyer, and we are taking phone calls at 1-800-723-8029. We're in hour number two. We've been talking about Denny Hastert. We've been talking about a movement to draft Joe Biden for President of the United States. Again, a discussion that we began prior to this story of Beau Biden's death today, which obviously has shocked a lot of people in Washington, D.C., and our condolences go out to the Biden family. But we are now going to talk about the other big story that is really unfolding right now in a rare Sunday night session, literally as we do this program. The United States Senate is actually doing work for their pay, and they are debating, or they're about to debate. They've just passed a resolution that they are going to continue the debate over the Patriot Act, which expires at midnight tonight. And I want to ask a political question before I ask a policy question. Rand Paul has become the point person for this issue. He wants to stop the reauthorization of the Patriot Act. He even opposes the House version, which even the president seems to support, and some Democrats, which, again, has not yet been voted on by the United States Senate. But in your view, Chris Roebling, will this high visibility on this issue help or hurt Rand Paul?
Help. Absolutely help. Well, it's a discernible difference. It's a definable issue. It's something that will get him support. It already has. I think it'll continue to do so. I think young people are deeply, deeply skeptical of government's awareness of all of this metadata and possession of all of this metadata. And I think they viscerally oppose the sort of what they understand to be the Patriot Act's thrust to increase awareness of what's going on outside the country and its relationship to what's going on inside the country. So I think this is a very important, definable difference for Rand Paul that will get him a constituency. How far he gets with that, who knows?
William Pierce, who's the head of the draft Joe Biden 2016 committee, you're the youngest member of this panel. Do you agree with that assessment of the 27-year-olds, of which you are one?
Absolutely. Right now, if you look at the Republicans, there's about 20, 21 candidates, maybe more, on the Republican side who are running for president. And the most important thing right now, just from a campaign staff point of view, you have to distinguish yourself. And this is a way that Rand Paul can distinguish himself. He can come out here and get a huge constituency. If you look at all the upcoming Republican debates, you have to get at least 10% of the vote in the polls in order to get on stage. This is Rand Paul's chance to shine, create a constituency, and then get into the debate.
In your view, does he also have the possibility to bring in independents and maybe even some liberal Democrats because he's standing out in a field?
Absolutely, because so I have a friend who didn't even know who Rand Paul was, and we were watching when he was on a few weeks ago on one of the Sunday programs. And then she sat there, and she's like, and I explained who he was beforehand, and then she said, what are you talking about? This is just an average guy. I actually couldn't consider voting for him. Because the thing is, a lot of everyday people who are going to be voting in this election, they don't understand, they don't know the backstory to Rand Paul, Carly Fiorina, and all the other candidates that are out there. They just see about the 20-30 second spot on the Sunday morning news on the cable news.
Christine Svensson, another Republican. Does this help or hurt Rand Paul?
Hurt. It puts him on the map. I mean, it defines who he is.
But it hurts him.
I'm sorry, help. Did I not say that?
You said hurt.
I'm so sorry. It helps him.
You said so, hurt before you said help.
Oh, goodness. All right. So he is the libertarian brand, and he's a libertarian candidate. That's a powerful movement, not as powerful as some would like it to be. But in addition to representing the Libertarian Party, in essence, even though he's a de facto Republican, yeah, it makes him a populist. I mean, it makes him appeal to young people and such.
And everybody in the party is against him, virtually.
About that issue, yes. It's amazing because he has some very salient points about it. I mean, I don't agree with his position on this particular issue, but I appreciate his points. I'm so glad that someone is making these points.
It's almost Dave Lundy. Exactly.
Dave Lundy, I want to get Dave's response.
Well, I think it depends what his end game is. Your question is, does it help or hurt? If his end game is to be nominated by the Republican Party for president of the United States, it hurts. I disagree completely with everybody else here. I think it hurts. I think it hurts dramatically. And Bruce, you and I have been on opposite sides of this. You and I have been talking about this for over a year. You think Rand Paul's the guy. I think Rand Paul is not. And I think this is just another example where the overwhelming majority of Republicans are much more concerned about national security than they are about civil liberties. And I think that within the base, and I think that if you have, while it's a distinguishing characteristic, it will get him to double digits, but I think it will destroy his ability.
I don't, by the way, just to correct me if you think I'm wrong, and I know you will, which is one of the reasons why I like to have you on the show. I don't believe I've said that Rand Paul will be the Republican nominee. What I think I've said consistently is that Rand Paul will definitely be in the top four, and he will be a finalist, and he will also, in my view, I will fine-tune it even a little bit more. I think he will probably might be the last dog standing, as his father was, and be a viable candidate all the way to the convention in Cleveland. I will say that. The other thing I want to say about this is I believe that Rand Paul is also a young man. Historically, the Republican Party, they have sometimes turned to candidates who've run once or twice. And I do believe, given the demographic nature of the country, I do believe that Rand Paul in 2015 and 16 has the opportunity to light the match that may not pay off for him in 2016. But in 20 or 24, he has the ability to do what Barry Goldwater did and what Ronald Reagan did 8 years later after Barry Goldwater is to plant the seed and become literally a guy whose moment in American politics will ultimately come.
Okay, so I couple of reactions. I agree with David that Republicans are very concerned about national security and about the influence of the United States in the world at large. And they're very concerned about where it is after 6.5 years of Obama. And I think that is an area in which Paul does not measure up relative to the Republican base. However, I think your mention of Reagan is important because just as Reagan was excoriated in 1975 and 76 yes. over the Panama Canal treaties. Everybody in Washington said, this guy's a lunatic. He's a cowboy actor.
And he was taking on the incumbent Republican president of the United States.
He was taking on the incumbent Republican president of the United States who had Ellsworth Bunker and Elliot Richardson, for cripe's sake, negotiating these Panama Canal treaties. And Reagan seemed like he was out of his depth. But over time, that distinguished him nationally. Now, I don't disagree with David that Rand Paul is not a precise fit with the Republican voting. But
now,
your point about him being in the last round, I think that is absolutely true. And if he performs well in the last round, you never know where these guys go. And he could be laying the seeds for 4 years from now.
And I'll just say real quickly, the reason I disagree with you so strongly is that it's not unlike Ronald Reagan, who set himself apart on one issue. With Rand Paul,
actually, there were many, but
with Rand Paul, there are so many issues where he is on a fundamentally opposite page, and that's why you see establishment Republicans, whether it's Dick Cheney or others, attacking him so vigorously as being to the left of Barack Obama on foreign policy.
Well, I think in that particular case, there's a lot of Republicans that like Dick Cheney, and I think there's a lot of Republicans that don't like Dick Cheney. Back shortly from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We're talking about presidential politics. We're talking about now. Let's move on from the politics. Let's move on to the specifics of the Patriot Act. Do you think it should be repealed?
No. No. Oh, because I believe that the threat of terrorism is real. I believe not only in the Middle East, but they are dying to come in through our southern borders and bring in a dirty bomb or whatnot. And we have to really be careful and maintain a very close watch on the activities of these Islamists.
So you believe everything that's been done since September 11th has resulted in the situation that we have now where there's not been another attack domestically?
I think there's so much that we don't know about, but we've thwarted a lot of attacks. I really
initially, the president said that there were hundreds of instances where the act had really stopped at terrorism. And then I guess several investigative reporters looked into that, and I guess there was actually only one incident where it could be traced to the Patriot Act.
That's perhaps true. But on the other hand, I mean, it's security versus liberty. And yes, I like to consider myself, I have a streak of libertarian in me, but 9/11 just woke us all up.
But does it make any difference, since we're talking about the collection of data? And by the way, we are not talking about listening in on phone conversations, okay? The government has the ability to do that. The NSA has had the ability to do that since the late 70s. But this program and the Patriot Act is not what we're talking about.
Well, yeah.
We're talking about collection of data.
Metadata.
Metadata. And one of the big issues is who is going to collect it. Now, right now, under the Patriot Act, it is collected by the government. The House Freedom Bill, which they have passed, which, again, the Senate has not yet acted on, basically turns that responsibility back to the phone companies that generally does keep records. Does it make any difference, I mean, to people of you and your generation, William, does it make any difference to who keep intimates? Are you okay with the phone company keeping the records, or are you okay with the government keeping the records?
Personally, I'm okay with no one keeping the records.
No one?
No one. Because Basically it's personal, it's private, and basically in this day and age, basically that data can be used for hundreds upon thousands of different ways. For example, if you even just go on Facebook, for example, you're popping up with 20, 30 ads because of that metadata. And basically that's very important. It's proprietary information that companies go crazy for. Plus on the flip side of things, when it comes to the government, in this day and age, I just don't see the need for it.
Dave Lundy, I want to get Dave Lundy's response.
Well, I think that we need to understand what we're talking about here. The Patriot Act itself is not expiring at midnight. There are three elements of the Patriot Act that are expiring: the mass collection, the metadata program that you're talking about, and then there's a separate wiretapping provision and a lone wolf provision,
that are
going to expire at midnight.
Random wiretapping.
Right. And I tend to listen to Richard Clark, the former security advisor to both Republican and Democratic administrations on this one. And basically he said, look, the metadata program really hasn't amounted to much so far. And so he's less concerned about that as he is about the other two programs, which he thinks are of at least some value. But nobody is suggesting, I mean, look, our privacy If you have a smartphone, your privacy is invaded. If you're on Facebook, if you're on Twitter, these days your privacy is so badly invaded by every commercial enterprise, which is why the moment I go looking at a website for, say, a car company, suddenly that's the ad that appears in Facebook and on Google and on everything else I do. You know, the cookies are following you. They're tracking you around the internet. So am I concerned that the government is overly intrusive? Yes, I am. I do tend to have a civil libertarian streak in me, believe it or not, Chris. I think that we have to be careful because the threats are getting worse, not better.
But who should collect the data and keep it? Are you comfortable with the government keeping it, or should the cellular phone companies keep it?
I think it's somewhat, I think it's a much ado about nothing in terms of whether it's the government or whether it's the phone companies, because the government can get it whenever they want it under the House version of the act, which, by the way, the Senate just voted 77-17 to debate that now.
Right. So it's going on as we speak. We're debating it here. It's going on in the Senate. But we're letting you call in about it. Go ahead.
So it's not the metadata that causes the relational ads that were just referred to by William. I mean, that is the actual content. And everybody who signs up for Twitter or everybody who signs up for Instagram or Pinterest or Facebook says you may do that. So that's
volunteer.
You authorize them to do that when you click that thing without reading it, which, let's face it, that's what all of us do. None of us read it except maybe some lawyers.
Correct.
Like, you know, Christine. But everybody else just clicks, right? And that's saying you can do that. So
you said millennials were upset with the government's ability to do that, and yet it is millennials that are pushing. Am I missing your point?
No. I believe that there are a lot of millennials who are sort of led by Edward Snowden, and I don't think they're necessarily on all fours with what's going on. With respect to the metadata, that is an extremely controversial subject. That metadata is not personal, unlike the Facebook post that I just put out or the Facebook post that somebody's going to put out now. And that metadata, if it resides with the federal government, it is immediately available to the NSA on a court order if necessary, okay? If it resides with the commercial provider, it is not immediately accessible by the NSA with a court order. It takes another loop of activity.
And they also, there's nothing in the current or even in the Freedom Act that says that the companies have to keep them for a period of time.
I know.
They may want to only keep them for a couple of months. William wants to get into it.
My point about that is basically this, though. Everywhere we go, everything we do, we're monitored by something. We just have to put it. We have basically just walking moving GPSs on our phone.
Right.
I'm taking it a step further. If it means that basically that little bit of a metadata or whatever is not available right away to the government, to the cell phone company, whoever, then that's basically one more level of security and privacy that we allow to feel.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I mean, because the metadata is not about what you have done, A, and B, the metadata is not recallable by the NSA until they go and get a showing to a federal judge.
Yeah.
So what you're talking about is information that is stored away essentially in a Al Gore lockbox.
That's what these FISA courts are all about.
But the fear that's out there, and again, the fear may be greater than the reality of what the government really does at the moment. But the fear, and this goes back to the very first story when Edward Snowden's name became a household name. And part of that story said, when he revealed all these programs,
falsely,
he said that one of the goals was to deal with and to have an awareness of the behavior. So now
We're talking about behavior.
And that's just because you have a cell phone, because if you have this cell phone, as everyone has said tonight, if you've got a smartphone, people know your behavior.
Well, good morning. All of us have crossed that threshold years and years ago. I mean, the power company in Milwaukee can tell if a guy got, I don't mean to be sexist here, but if a guy changes his girlfriend, the electric company in Milwaukee can figure that out because of the difference in the usage of power in terms of which one has what wattage on her hair dryer. Okay. That is how intrusive.
Wow.
You cannot imagine the amount of data that is available on every one of us in the commercial marketplace.
I had an experience less than 3 weeks ago. I was going to go out to a movie. I was checking in a variety of places where I could see this particular movie. I decided that no theater that was near me, the timing wasn't right, and I was saying, the hell, I'm not going to go to see this movie tonight. Less than 20 minutes later, I get, when I go back on the internet again, there's a little pop-up that says, sorry you didn't see the movie you wanted. How about going out to dinner instead?
You have authorized
and
this.
And dinner's a good date too.
You've authorized this.
That's exactly what it was.
You have
that's
authorized
what it said.
This. And there are folks, there are marketing people who have been learning this stuff about you since Montgomery Ward invented direct mail advertising 120 years ago here in the city of Chicago.
Well, and this is the thing. Let me just say this. Yeah, I had to, in a statewide race in Pennsylvania, we had to use that marketing data.
Sure.
And the thing is, it actually is just scary about the amount of information that, that you have.
Sure.
For example, when we were in Pennsylvania, we actually set it up so for a volunteer who came in and she was a dog owner, we just gave a list of every house in her area that just had dogs. Now, when you register to vote, you don't sit there and say on your voter registration form, do I have a dog, yes or no?
But I'm a schnauzer.
You know, you don't put that down. But because of marketing data, we can basically pinpoint and target down in this day and age and say, that household right there have a dog. And basically, we can take it even a step further, and we can say basically, this person who just registered last month is going to vote for candidate
X. But that was my point.
That's exactly my point.
As a society, and we, I hope someday we actually confront these issues, but right now we're just saying, that's okay. I like Facebook. It's okay.
Well,
How would you like to
confront it?
We've already lost this war.
Exactly. But that is my point. I'm not sure there's a way for us to confront it. We have made this decision that the conveniences of the internet age are worth the sacrifice of our privacy.
And what we're also what we're also saying by relinquishing this power, and this is where the evil aspect of potential government intrusion can go. And that is they can use this power to destroy people, to go after them with indictments, to know about what websites they go to know about what their track records were in the past, and they can use that to punish their enemies, whoever that government, whoever that administration views as their enemies.
Yes. That's what the Obama people did at the IRS, using IRS to target people who disagree with their views.
Really?
How do you not know this is true?
Lois Lerner did, David. No. You know that's what she did.
Look, it's funny because I was about to say,
that's exactly what she did.
1-800-723-8289, back shortly from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
We're back. We're going to let's pick up on our conversation because during the break we were talking about, you know, what government can do and what government can't do, and if they have this information, if government has the ability to do something, this is my fear. If government has the ability to do something, and again, former Illinois Congressman Henry Hyde, the late Henry Hyde, back in 1975, when he was on the House Intelligence Committee, said to me in an interview that the National Security Agency, which nobody had ever heard of in 1975, they had the ability to listen in on every phone conversation in America at any time. That was in 1975, he said that. So my question is, if government has the ability to do that. How confident are you that there aren't some people in the government who will take advantage of that ability to use it for political gain? William?
It's going on. It's as simple as that. It's going on because the thing is, while human, and basically just because, let me take a step back and say this. While I did serve in the military, I had a security clearance. And basically I did see other people, and while I was a military police officer, I was involved in cases where basically people's security clearances were revoked because they were doing stuff that they shouldn't have. And this goes, and it goes as far as basically some people just basically accessing stuff that they shouldn't have. Some people sharing stuff just to impress other people. But basically, anyone can just do bad stuff.
Does everybody at this table believe there's no such thing as a secret?
I kind of do. Yeah, no, it's interesting you say that. I don't think there are secrets. I think everything leaks. And by the way, to your point, it has gone on. We live in a Putin-esque society. And I think that, I mean, Lois Lerner, she's Exhibit A.
Oh, good grief.
They have actually exercised that.
Oh, my God. You are not seriously comparing Vladimir Putin, who murders his enemies by injecting poison in them in foreign hotels, with a handful of Republican or of conservative 501c4 organizations who were abusing the tax code. Are you really drawing that comparison here, Christine?
Yeah, actually, I am. Yeah, I don't know that
he's a slippery slope.
Right.
It's not a slippery slope.
It is a slippery slope.
The difference
are the first ones to say that, and they're right when they say that. And the whole answer to Bruce's question is at the heart of this, and we all have to be eternally vigilant. You don't get liberty forever.
But
you're saying, though, is if there are no secrets, portion of our program early on was the indictment of Dennis Hastert. Now, he was Speaker of the House. The payment to this individual A, as referenced in the indictment, did not happen until 2010. Denny Hastert was not the Speaker of the House at that point. So the question is, if this was, as you have suggested earlier in the program, some of these rumors about Speaker Hastert may have been aware. Some people in the district might have been aware of them. I think you referenced that you knew someone that was on the wrestling team, right?
Well, but here's the thing. I don't think that, quote unquote, people were aware. I mean, I've read a lot of stories in the last 2 days. People in the district had no idea this was going on. There's probably 3 or 4 people in the United States that know that this may have happened.
But that
were on the wrestling team.
But that makes it considerably more potentially harmful when it's known by just that small a group. And
right.
So, look, I mean, we are living in a big, complex society, and folks can be compromised. And
especially when you're the Speaker of the House.
Especially when you're in a position of influence. I had the privilege when I was a college kid of working for the CIA. I want to tell you, folks checked my background down to,
goodness,
you know, right. And
clearly
everybody
that system
else's
wasn't working.
Thank you. And, you know, you get into a situation like you get into folks who are elected and they are presumptively going to get a clearance if they're put onto an intelligence committee. There still has to be a personal history statement. There still has to be a background investigation. They still have to pass all of the tests for clearance, and some of them don't pass. And there are some who are restricted from receiving government secrets. It takes a lot of vigilance by a lot of people, and I believe it starts as a Fourth Amendment conservative. I believe it starts with limiting government, not giving in to the Democrat impulse to grow government in every direction at all times.
Sorry, didn't you say that was Denny Hastert who wanted to grow government at all times?
Yes.
I'm just confused.
That's why he's a lousy Republican and why I was always opposed to him.
Yes. So, look, I think that getting back to your question of is there such a thing as a secret, I think, yes, there is such a thing as a secret. I think that people who have access to classified, to secret information, whether it's personal in nature or otherwise, there will always be the temptation. It's a human temptation. Oh, my God, look, I have the ability to look and see everything. people are going to abuse that, and people are going to get thrown out of the service accordingly, whether that's the NSA or whether it's military intelligence. It doesn't matter. So I get a little upset or a little agitated when we start comparing. This government has unlimited abilities right now to mess with us. They have unlimited knowledge into our affairs. I mean, the private sector does. Imagine what the government does.
So if
the government wanted to abuse it in a serious way, if Obama is as evil as the Republicans say, you guys would be in jail.
David, you're absolutely wrong. You are absolutely missing the point. And you know I love you as an individual. However, you guys fail to see the significance. You lack the intellectual, in my opinion, integrity to say what Lois Lerner did and what the IRS did is fundamentally irreconcilable with our nation's notion of ordered liberty. It should never have gotten within a country mile, but you guys absolutely try to find ways to justify it.
I'm not justifying what Lois Lerner did.
She ought to be in jail. She should have been prosecuted.
What Lois Lerner did.
No, you are, because you support Barack Obama and Eric Holder and Loretta Lynn.
And you have
failed
to prove the connection between the White House and the IRS. It was not being done at the direction of the
White
House.
Back to my question.
She did,
if there are no secrets, does the public have a right to know about secrets? William.
No.
And you don't have a right.
No, because basically this is a dink. The United States government, the United States military, and the intelligence community, they do that for the protection of us. But at the end of the day, I have to agree with my Republican counterpoints on this. Basically, we do have some sense of privacy. And basically, what I mean by that is basically it's a confusing conundrum that we're in. And it's just really hard to just describe. And I just want to kind of leave it at that.
Now factoring into this, if the secrets are out there and because of technology and because of the willingness to share, and because of the growth of social media and new media and internet journalists and bloggers and everyone else that's out there in the blogosphere, do they represent, in your view, Christine, do they represent a positive addition to the national discourse, or do they represent potential people that will do the discourse harm by abusing the information they have?
Well, people are always going to be abusing that information. We're stuck with that. Back to your original question, I mean, should classified information, once it's been leaked, be, you know, open to the general public? No.
I don't mean classified information. What about titillating information? I mean, we've been talking about Denny Hatch. What about the titillating information?
Oh, we're entitled to all that.
Okay.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No. Well, we're not entitled to
Kim
it.
Kim Kardashian or Denny Hastert's no,
about,
different
about,
because
about,
he was a public official.
About politicians, though.
Okay. Well, here's the thing.
In a campaign. Is
example,
all fair about a person's political background if they're running for president of the United States?
Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
Unless you're Barack Obama, and then you're not allowed
to. That's right.
Find
I was just going
to
talk about that.
Unless you're Barack Obama, in which case.
Well, we found out a lot.
Left-wing media will prevent anybody from knowing anything.
Well, they didn't prevent Reverend Wright.
No, they didn't. But do you think that there was any of the vetting of Barack Obama that has been done?
Zero vetting.
Yes.
They vetted him about, I would say they vetted about 12%. I mean, Sarah Palin gets considered for
everyone in the
Vice
world goes
president.
To Wasilla,
yeah.
Alaska, and
I mean,
no one is interested in his background at Columbia or
Occidental
College.
We don't even know what his transcripts
are.
Right.
No, it's
completely
just
true.
Opened up the book.
He didn't release it, and they never asked for it, right. And it's been a conspiracy of silence. And this is the pervasive influence of the left in American society today. It has taken over academia. It's taken over journalism. And you get a Barack Obama, who is absolutely a cipher.
He's a mystery figure.
He's a mystery
figure. Yeah, we don't know anything about him.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I sit there and I'm going, I remember 2007 and 2008. I personally spoke with probably 15 different national reporters who were investigating the background of Barack Obama.
I know, and you don't know anything about Barack Obama.
They were talking to everybody.
No,
Oh my God. They went to Harvard.
They did not go to Occidental or Columbia.
I'm going to name a name. Mark Gordon was the head of policy for the Illinois State Senate Republicans.
Right.
Okay? Mark Gordon. Never a truer word has been spoken than those by Mark Gordon in his entirely. He's totally apolitical. He's a policy wonk of the first order.
I know. Yeah,
you
I know.
Talk, Mark.
And?
Ask him how many times he was asked by national reporters about Barack Obama.
Zero.
You got it, baby.
Right.
They couldn't have cared less.
Okay,
they don't
well,
care. Never,
all my friends on
them.
The Democratic side got questioned by these national
you
reporters.
You guys know about
him. What do you think the Democrats are going to say about
they
Barack
only
Obama, David?
Democrats.
Can you begin to get the picture?
David, you know about him from the day that he became a state senator. That's about it. But
correct.
Before, exactly, that's my point.
This is
what
why you got to read Stanley Kurtz.
Right.
What about pre-birth? You know,
because
I heard he was born in Kenya. That's what Donald Trump said. Please, you guys are just so defending on this one.
The reason that that became an issue is
we'll
because
be right
the Obama
back.
Campaign.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
We're back. Hold on, folks. We are back. We are back on the air. We're back on the air, governed by the FCC. Watch what we say now. Let's go to Austin, Texas. Joseph's listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead, Joseph.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah, I'm going to try to make the call screener look good. Because, okay. You know, he told me he's had some dillies this calling in.
Okay.
I support Rand Paul's filibuster. The NSA bill, not because, you know, he's doing it because he thinks it violates our privacy. I think it's a stupid approach. It's a wasteful approach to be monitoring 330 million people. Why not monitor the 10,000 that are, you know, at risk of terrorism?
For the very reason that they're not monitoring. This is the level of misunderstanding. No one's monitoring anyone on this collection of metadata. What they are doing is receiving a bunch of ones and zeros from the phone companies, and they're putting them in an Al Gore lockbox. No one is sitting around. I'm sorry.
What?
No, what's the caller's name again? Joseph. Joseph, no one is dialing in to find out who did Joseph talk to. This is there in case they get intelligence about overseas elements who are connecting with inside the U.S. elements. And then they have a legal basis upon which, to go to court and to make a showing to a federal judge, an Article III judge, and say, we need to check this out.
Or Joseph, back to you.
All right. It hasn't helped one iota. It didn't help with the terrorists in Dallas. It didn't help with the Boston Marathon bombers. It's just a giant waste of. It's the typical federal government approach. It's wasteful. It's like at the airports, instead of looking like the Israelis do, looking for the terrorists to get on the plane, the U.S. approach is let's make every single person that gets on the plane get an anal exam.
Well, it's not everybody. No, nobody. Not everybody gets an anal exam.
Oh, but I mean, old ladies in wheelchairs get an anal exam. I mean, it's just a stupid, wasteful approach, and it doesn't...
Well, we're assuming you mean anal exam metaphorically.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though.
No, I don't think he is.
Old ladies have been subjected. They had to strip search old ladies in wheelchairs.
But
I don't know.
Correct
anyway,
me if
thank
I'm,
you for your call.
Okay.
Thank you for your call.
Didn't we thwart the Dallas, the attempts of the Dallas people to, didn't they want to kill Pam Galar or the people that were drawing that Muslim cartoonist thing? Isn't that what he's talking about?
No, he's gone. The the question that we have in the remaining time we have, the Patriot Act it doesn't look like they will vote on it tonight. Again, it will expire at midnight. The president has said that he hopes, obviously, and prays that there will not be any incident that will be traced back. Should there be an incident, the other suggestion is that there will probably be some vote. There may be may come as early as Wednesday. So we may be in a 72-hour window when the Patriot Act is not being exercised. And the president is fearful that something dastardly could happen during that period of time. And we hope that it does not. But if it did, Chris Roebling, I mean, would the Republican Senate take huge hit?
These guys have got to be responsible for what they're doing or what they're not doing, their presence or their absence. You know, I had the privilege of moderating Mike Rogers, who is he's a four-star admiral, and he's the head of the National Security Agency, and he's the head of the Digital Command, whatever that's mm-hmm. called. So he has two very significant jobs at the same time. And, you know, his recitation to this group of about 300 about all of the steps they take to preserve and to safeguard this information was as impressive as any presentation anybody's ever heard from any government official since, you know, the Pharaoh. And these guys are very serious about it. They're patriotic Americans. They're not in there. This is not a lending library. They're following procedures. Now, are there always bad apples? There are always bad apples, and that's why you've got to have eternal vigilance.
Let me take a quick call from Milwaukee. Tom is listening to us on Sirius XM. Go ahead, Tom. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. I appreciate you guys letting me talk. But one of the things I do is my job is I'm a big data scientist. So what I do is I actually help customers, people, organizations take data sources that come in from unstructured data sources such as Google, such as Yahoo, such as Facebook, Twitter, you name it, essentially. And we sell the systems that actually kind of store all this data, but more importantly, we help those organizations understand how to ask it the right questions. And when I hear a lot of talk about the NSA and all these different things that people get really concerned about, you really have to understand when we're talking about in the context of metadata, is that all metadata is unrelatable when it initially comes in. And so our job, when we do this in the private sector, is to create these very large overarching relationships of data. Then we ask it questions around, what does the customer want to do? Does the customer want to look at how to target specific markets in a specific population base that goes out and wants to pump a certain product? We can literally target exactly who those people are, where they live, why they would buy it, and when they would potentially buy it. It's very, very precise in that way. But when that data comes in, until we're ready to ask it a question, it really is unrelatable.
Tom, thank you very much. We are out of time, but don't hang up. I want to put you on hold. I want our producer, Dan Dorfman, to get your name and number so we can call you back at some point in the future. You came a very good call at the end of the show. We do have to move on. Our thanks to our guests this evening, William Pierce from the Draft Joe Biden Campaign for President, Christine Svensson, Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy. Thank you all for being with us. This program is a Gen B production produced in association with WCGO Radio 1590 in Evanston, Illinois. Our thanks to Colin Bobbitt and Dan Dorfman and Fritz Goldman for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago. Ah! Raid is here. Come on down to the Museum of Broadcast Communications as we pay tribute to the true advertising icons known as the Raid Bugs. Admission is free during the week of June 2nd through the 6th. So come on down and join us with the whole family at 360 North State Street in downtown Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.